TFM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rasheen. And Matthew, I've got a surprise for you today. I've brought my quantum cat to today's recording. It may or may not step on the keyboard, depending on who is observing it.
Oh my gosh. I mean, do we even know that it exists, Chris? And if it stepped on a keyboard, is it going to step through and actually get stuck? Or I don't know. How does this quantum cat thing work?
That's maybe not exactly how it works, which of course Christine Chappell knows. But I think that as long as we don't tell Starfleet about the cat today, we'll be fine. Let's just see how big it grows.
Chris, I think that's a great idea. I'm always interested to see how big, you know, a Schrodinger's quantum cat can get. But, you know, I don't know if I have enough space. But does it matter with quantum, like, things? Because don't they, like, phase in and out of our space-time continuum? And, you know, they don't really take up space in our universe? I don't know. This is getting really theoretical, so...
It is. So I think we should just move on. And today, everyone, we're going to talk about the sixth episode of season two of Strange New Worlds, Lost in Translation. I must say, I was disappointed. I was expecting a Bill Murray cameo in this one, and we didn't get it. But anyway, here's a quick rundown of the story that we did get. When the Enterprise arrives at Bannon's Nebula to help get Starfleet's newest gas station up and running, Uhura receives a mysterious signal that no one else can hear. She begins having hallucinations that include scenes of death and her old friend and mentor, Himmer. Systems failures lead to the discovery of a saboteur who is experiencing the same brain-rattling noises and unreal scenarios. As Uhura slowly loses her mind, she unravels the mystery, saving the ship and discovering an unknown life form in the process. And then she sits down with her future captain and Mr. Spock for an evening of light jazz, chatting, and, very importantly, Matthew, no punching. So,
well, Chris, did you notice before we even get started, we got the band on the Enterprise?
Yes, we did.
So, I mean, I guess the UPN executives finally got their wish.
They finally got their wish. You know, it only took about 20 years, but they got their wish. And I couldn't tell for sure with my blurry vision, but I believe that was a Vulcan jazz drummer.
I mean, he keeps good time.
That's only logical. You have to keep good time in music. So, Matthew, let's start with, well, the first thing we have on our outline is friendship, the theme of friendship and how it matters, which to me felt like the key thread running through this whole episode, because it kept coming up with different characters in different combinations. Friendship or relationships, mentorships, sibling rivalry, all sorts of elements like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've rightly hit on the head that it could maybe be better said that relationships matter. Mm-hmm. Our interpersonal relationships are what make life worth living, and they're what help us grow. And I think we see that in all sorts of different ways. Like you mentioned, all of the key relationships here, you know, whether it's the captain to his crew, whether it's Uhura to her friends, whether it's the budding relationship between Spock and Nurse Chapel, or the relationship that Kirk has with his brother, so family. I mean, all of these things, I think, are so key to what make us who we are and kind of spur us forward. Also things that can also cause tension or frustration, you know. And then even the more, I think, metaphysical idea of this relationship between a group of aliens that we can neither see, hear, or sense in any way, even with our technology, and the relationship that we then have with them. And so I think, you know, all of that is fascinating. And I think it also kind of comes down to it's the relationships that matter, but it's also the kind of the theme of a failure to communicate well that can cause relationships to either crumble or sour or have difficulty, because in each one of these places, we're also having that, right? Where, you know, you have Uhura, of course, not being able to understand the aliens. You have Kirk and his brother and their conflict. You have Spock and Chapel kind of in some ways very much disagreeing about how they want to handle this budding relationship as it applies to the rest of the people around them and Starfleet. You know, you have the relationship between Number One and Pelia, you know, and then, of course, you have the lost relationship here between and the lack of communication between somebody who's gone, who's somebody who's died. And so I think all of these things, you know, the thematic elements of the episode work pretty well on that front. But I would also say, you know, it's pretty standard Star Trek fare in that sense, thematically.
Yeah, right, right. Well, Star Trek is, I guess I shouldn't say it's always been about relationships, but it has. It depends on the series, if that comes to the forefront as much as it does on another series. But since TOS, of course, the relationships between Kirk and Spock and McCoy, or even Kirk and the Enterprise, kicked it off, and it's just run all through the franchise ever since then. This episode was interesting to me in how it brought so many people together in that sense, because a typical episode will focus on two characters or three characters, where here we had Uhura and Hemmer. We had, of course, Spock and Chapel, as you mentioned, James T. Kirk and George Samuel Kirk's sibling rivalry, but also we had the La'an James T. Kirk element that was introduced in Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, which was written by the same writer as this episode. This was actually written by two people, but David Reed is one of them. The other is Onitra Johnson, but David Reed wrote Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. And so it seemed natural that he would pick up that thread in this episode that was left dangling there at the end of the time traveling. But you've also got things like Pelia and Una, and flashing back to when Una was at the academy, and then Pelia rightfully calling out that, hey, you know, it's not because I gave you a C, which you deserved, by the way, but, you know, it's because I remind you that Hemmer is gone. And I thought that this episode, I thought, was a nice little tribute to Hemmer and the fact that he wasn't on the show very long. And it was nice that they brought the character back in a meaningful way. You know, we heard that he was going to be coming back, and I was thinking, well, how are they going to do that? And I don't want them to just bring him back. I don't want it to be like Shax on Lower Decks, where he's just back after he died, which didn't bother me at all, A, because it's a comedy, but B, because we've had plenty of characters in Star Trek come back after they died, Spock being a key one. But I was wondering how they were going to do it in this episode, and I think they found a really nice way to do it in a way that is meaningful for his crewmates, and it really highlighted the impact that losing someone can have on your life. And how it both hurts you, but also can inspire you and encourage you to move forward and remember them and be better. So I thought it was handled pretty well. And the final moment where we see the kind of zombie-like decaying Hemmer fading into the healthy Hemmer, I also thought was visually a nice way to pay tribute to the character and also illustrate what Uhura is feeling, which was something that no one else on the bridge could sense or see.
No, I agree with you 100%. And I think the beauty of what they do with the Hemmer part here is I think they show the importance. And we talked, you know, about the idea of relationships mattering and mentorship and how important that is mm-hmm. in our lives. You know, each one of us has had different mentors in our lives who have and intentionally or unintentionally influenced who we are. And so I think this pays homage to that in a beautiful way with, you know, Uhura and her relationship with Hemmer. And then it alludes to the fact of, you know, the long-standing relationship that Number One had with Hemmer as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact that he had had. We obviously don't learn details there the way we do with Uhura and his relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But it's implied that that's the case. And so, you know, I think it is nice to be able to see a reflection of the fact of how much relationships matter. And you know, it's actually when you think about the reason that TOS itself became a hit, especially in syndication, was people responding to the relationship between the trinity of characters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what carried the show through and then, of course, led to them doing films and everything else we have. It really came down to the fact of these three people being in relationship together and people responding to that. And so, you know, I think that's the thing that when Star Trek is at its best, it finds a way for us to be connected with the characters and their relationships together that then mirrors our own personal experiences with friendships and relationships in our lives. And I think this is actually one of the reasons why, you know, when people give Deep Space Nine a chance and really start watching it, it's one of the reasons it becomes one of the most popular for them, if not the most popular, because it's the show that really digs into the thing to which we are so intimately involved in all of our lives, which is the relationships in our lives and how they impact the people that we are. And so, you know, this is an episode that really tries to dig into that for a bunch of our different, you know, different characters here on the mm-hmm. show, not just the captain or, you know, Number One, but we're also doing that with Uhura and mm-hmm. strangely enough with Kirk and his brother Sam and mm-hmm. with Spock and Chapel and the, you know, we do have the captain and the way in which he interacts with his crew and mm-hmm. you know, Pike is very fatherly in many mm-hmm. ways to Uhura in this way. So I think all of that is, and honestly, I would say this is the best part of the episode.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, I think that this is the best part of the episode. Going back to the Kirks, I'm just thinking, I almost feel like there are three Kirks battling for the attention of their father here. There's James Kirk, there's Sam Kirk, and then there's Sam's mustache.
Mm, that's understandable. Yes, that does demand attention for sure. And really just a mistake on Sam's part. But he'll realize that in about 10 years when he sees in a hollow image of himself and was like, what was I thinking?
Reminds me a little bit of on News Radio when Matthew comes back from the summer break with this mustache and Mr. James pulls him over and shows him a picture. So you know who that is? That was me. He thought that looked good. But no, actually, yeah. I think Sam's mustache looks fine. But it's funny. It's not like it's a huge mustache or anything, but it just stands out for some reason to me when mm-hmm. I look at it. And I have a goatee, so I'm not opposed to facial hair in any way. But I just think it's interesting how striking it is. But it's a great differentiator between him and James for sure.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to juxtapose that, what we just talked about with, mm-hmm. I think, the rest of the episode, which, mm-hmm. and this is not to be unkind in any way,
mm-hmm.
but I think is a very bland episode,
mm-hmm.
the rest of it, because it's something that we've just seen so many times in Star Trek,
mm-hmm.
and it could have been on absolutely any of the shows, and so therefore it doesn't really feel as though they're utilizing, and we talked about this last week, and this is absolutely an episode. It's like, I don't feel like you're utilizing your time well especially mm-hmm. when I think of the way in which the first season did such a good job of utilizing the time that they had and building the threads throughout the season.
Mm-hmm.
We have so many dangling threads from the first season that we've not even touched upon yet. And this is the sixth episode. The next episode is the one that's our crossover with Lord Dex. So that's a whole episode in itself that's not necessarily completely devoted to, mm-hmm. you know, the running threads of this series. And so it's like, well, I really feel as though this episode is, in all honesty, a waste of time when it comes to the fact that I think this is the point in the season where we needed to pick up some of those major threads that we had in the first season and started to kind of like weave those in a little bit to this season so that we can kind of work our way towards the end because we're almost there already. It's crazy.
Well, that's the thing, right? So this episode, I don't think it's a waste of time in terms of what it's doing for the characters or for the series. What's striking to me is that we left these threads dangling at the end of last season, and we haven't touched them at all. The Cybok one in particular.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised that we haven't touched that at all at this point. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that the episode after this one is the Lower Decks episode, and then the one after that, I believe, is a musical. So
the one after that is not the musical. That's okay. The penultimate episode, I believe, of the season.
We have three left, and one of them is a musical. So that's it's
right.
The
next episode is called Under the Cloak of War.
Okay.
After those old scientists.
That's probably not a musical unless it's based on Wagner.
It's not.
You know, it could be a Wagner thing, but no. Anyway, it's striking to me that, like, I think you're correct in saying that we're not making progress through the storylines that have been set up, and we're now almost to the end of the season. We only have three episodes left.
Well, and so I just want to say, like, when I say waste of time, what I mean is for this series in the way that it's set up. It's not a mm-hmm. waste of time in the sense that we do get some nice character development here and all of those kind of things, which is wonderful. But you can still do all the same character development you're wanting to do in this episode and mm-hmm. tell a story that actually furthers the threads of Strange New Worlds. And so that's where it's like, I want the character elements of this, mm-hmm. but I also want then a story that matters more for the actual characters of Strange New Worlds in a way that fits the entire flow of the entire series mm-hmm. Better.
Yeah, see, that's where I start wondering if having many different writers, we always go back to DS9 because you and I are Niners, but having that tight-knit writer's room that we ended up with on DS9, I think was very conducive for knowing where you're going with the show and making sure that you are on track and you're following a path to get you to where you want to go with the show. And here, I feel like Strange New Worlds may have two schools of thought. There's the idea that we're going to do standalone episodes. We're not going to do these 10-episode stories where we just frantically drive you from start to finish, like Discovery has done and Picard did. We're going to have standalones. It's going to be like the old days. And then the other school of thought seems to be that we're going to have these character threads that are going to run through in a way that's closer to DS9. I feel like it's actually at this point moving a bit beyond Enterprise into the DS9 territory in terms of what they're wanting to do with the characters. And then you have various writers who in some cases haven't written other episodes at all in Star Trek, working on these. And so there's this maybe a lack of cohesion in terms of what's our destination? Where do we want to go with these story elements that we're introducing, like the Cybok one that I mentioned? So it could be a situation of that. And I feel like what they're doing would have worked perfectly fine on the series in the 90s where you had 26 episodes because you could do these fun little episodes and sprinkle them in. I mean,
100%.
Think about DS9 for us. bada bing, bada bing. It's a great episode. It doesn't advance the storyline that's going on. It's just a fun episode, and we love it. And I think that you can do those types of episodes no problem. Like we talked about last week, I think the short seasons make us feel a little bit like, yeah, we should move things along a little bit more. As for this story, anyway, in particular, what I thought was really good about this story is that you mentioned that it could have been on any series, and it could have been on any series. Yes, certainly I could see this happening on The Next Generation or Voyager. I think the series, the other series that this story would have worked best on is Enterprise. And the reason is because Enterprise, the original series Enterprise and now Strange New Worlds, you have a dedicated communications officer. Here you have Uhura, you had Hoshi on Enterprise. And I think the strength of this story and what sets it apart from being too generic, where there's an unknown life form that we can't recognize living in the cloud, which I actually figured out quite early in this episode that that's what was going on, is that it's all focused on Uhura and she's the communications officer. It's like the episode in the first season, Children of the Comet, which also relied on Uhura's linguistic skills to unravel some kind of mystery. I think Uhura is the only person on this crew who could have solved the mystery that she's presented with, that we're presented with here, because it relies on language and communication. So I think it was a good use of the character, and I think it does something to advance Uhura's character, to bring her to the Uhura that we know later on, who's so valued as a communications officer, because here she's very young and she's just figuring out a situation that fits her skill set and helps her grow in the same way that we saw happen on Enterprise with Hoshi in some situations. So the idea of having aliens who are living in the deuterium and we're harming them, we're killing them, that's been done before. Maybe not with deuterium, but with other aspects of space. Yeah, that's been done before multiple times on Star Trek. But for me, I thought this was still a good scenario for developing Uhura as a character.
And I definitely see what you're saying. And I would say that I believe that the major issue with the story is that it doesn't give you really any reason why Uhura or this other character are the ones hearing it. And they're the only ones who do. And I think it would have been nice if you had tied in her inability to express her emotional state to that, as well as this other character, to accentuate the thematic elements, right? That it's tapping into this unrealized or, you know, unexpressed emotion that's been kind of constipated in Uhura that she's never let out until this episode, where she finally kind of it admits to Kirk, you know, her experience with her parents and how that's been compounded now with Hemmer. And it's created this really emotionally taxing experience for her, and in a way that is unmanageable by herself, right? The the very need for counseling is seen here in Uhura. And I think the fact that the episode doesn't make that point and doesn't touch on any of that is one of the places where the writing really fails, because that's an element that I think would have made this. Okay, so if we're going to do this show then needs to basically be the Uhura show, where we're really digging into this character and the things that we've given her as a character that make her unique and interesting and special and different than the Uhura that we've ever known before. But it doesn't do that. It kind of does it halfway. And I think it could have been a much more impactful episode if it had done that. And then it would have been absolutely legitimate to tell this story, because, yes, we are giving you an Uhura you never knew existed, basically. And if that had been the case, I think this would have been an incredibly strong episode. Whereas by kind of doing it in a half, almost like half-hearted manner, it's good, but it could have been great.
Yeah, I think the way I think of it is, and I don't know the best way to have explained this in the episode and maintained the idea that these aliens are so different that there's no way we could have realized that we're harming them. But most likely the idea would be that these aliens, they're reaching out because they're being killed and they're able to give people visions of death to show that they're being harmed. And in Uhura's situation, and this is where it's tricky because most of these characters have lost someone, either someone who was under their command or a loved one. So it isn't unique that Uhura lost her family, but the combination of Uhura having bottled up her emotions from losing her family for these years and the loss of Himmer, who was a mentor to her, created this heightened state in her of emotional distress, and the aliens perhaps can sense that in corporeal beings, for lack of a better term they might use. And that's why they latched on to Uhura, because of all the people on the ship, she was right. The one who was maybe emanating this emotional, heightened emotional state more than anyone else. And so she's the one that they latched onto. And right. We also don't know, they might have some ability to know that in her brain, she has greater capabilities for communication and unraveling messages and linguistics that the others don't have. So there are many ways I can look at it and I can make it work as to why she was chosen. But of course, that isn't explained in the episode.
Yeah.
I think it's maybe softly explained in the episode when twice she goes to the planes, at least I think that's where it is. And the second time we see the crashed shuttle, which killed her family. And at that point, I think the implication is that this is the reason why she's the one that they've latched on to, is that there's this loss of family there. But it's a very soft explanation that certainly, if they had found a way to make this aspect of it clearer, then yeah, I agree, it would have strengthened the story.
Well, and so I think as you were talking, I was thinking about the Harry Potter series, and you, when you get to the Order of the Phoenix, and Harry can now all of a sudden see who's pulling the carriages. And they're beings that can only be seen by those that have seen death. And so having that be the rationale in some way, right? Again, I think that's the thing where, you know, Rowling is so good about creating these thematic elements and then using everything to build around these thematic elements in her books. And that's what this episode needed, is it needed somebody to really hit that connection, so that as we're expounding upon the great heart hurt of Uhura, that great heart hurt is actually a thing that's able to allow her to be able to communicate with these aliens, because they can reach out to her because of this emotional state that she's in. And I, again, it's just one of those things when we're dealing with themes, you have to find a way to make every single thing build towards that theme, especially when it comes to characters. And it's just where the writing, I think, kind of fails in the episode, because again, it's halfway there, but if you pushed it all the way, this becomes such a beautiful episode for the character of Uhura and really opens her up in a way that we've never had opened up before, because that's one of the things this show is doing with a character like her. And I think that's great. I think it's just only partially there.
Right. Because I do feel like this is an Uhura episode. If I just think about the story, as I've watched it several times, and as I go through, I feel that, yeah, this is an Uhura episode. But if I step back, and actually I did, it stands out to me here and there as I'm watching it, there is a lot of time spent with other characters that, while if your goal is to write an episode about why relationships matter, then spending time with all these characters makes sense, and it supports that goal. The one that stands out in particular is all the time between Una and Pelia, which, while it's fine for what it does, I also think that if you cut all of that out of this episode and you put that time into the Uhura element, you have a better story.
I think that that is fantastic. And I think that this is a place where the writer was trying to find a way to kind of accentuate the feelings of loss for Hemmer.
Right. Yeah.
And added an element to which did that part, but actually detracted from the main thematic element of the story. And so, yeah, it's strange to me because what it really seemed to need is an editor, basically, like a good book editor, come in and say, you know, what you've got here is a great start. Let's go back a little bit and rework some of this to make it great.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, and that's what I do actually as a job, is go in and trim out things that are fine. But if you remove them, you can create greater focus and have a stronger story for the reader. The other thing that I feel like they're trying to do here, and again, this would be easier for them to do if they had more episodes to work with, is they really do seem to be trying to ease us into the original series gradually. And there's a lot of time spent in this episode with Kirk and Uhura together. And I think that it makes sense in that Kirk is meeting people who will be part of his crew and who he will rely on in the future. And I think that what happens in this episode, Kirk and Uhura working together, Kirk seeing how empathetic and how intelligent Uhura is and how she solves this problem and saves these alien life forms, it explains some of the reason why he will choose her in the future to be his communications officer. But they spend a lot of time together, and then you have the scene at the end where Kirk and Uhura and Spock sit down together at the table and it pans away. And it's a very interesting scene because you're there on the Enterprise. It's Pike's Enterprise. We've spent a lot of time with all these other characters, but we end the episode with three characters who will be the bridge crew in the original series over off in the corner at this table themselves aboard the Enterprise. And the time that's being spent on this slow setup of introducing James T. Kirk to the show and how he and Spock meet for the first time here as well, because again, this is the first prime Kirk that we've had in Strange New Worlds. You know, that's also taking time. So we have attention split into several places in this story.
Yeah. Is it Prime Kirk? We can have that argument, but...
Well, it's meant to be Prime Kirk, but yeah, I do want to talk about how you feel about it, though. Yeah.
So I might say something that's wildly unpopular. So, shocker.
You never do that, Beth. You already talked about
it. Yeah, I know. I think that using Kirk in this story is an absolute waste of time. Kirk does not need to be in this episode. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that this should be an episode about building Uhura's relationship with the crew that she's already with.
Oh, sure.
And not with Kirk.
Right.
And Kirk's story with his brother also completely detracts from everything else that we're doing in this episode. For the most part, this is a place where the show, because it doesn't care about canon and it's not placing really any restrictions on itself, is hurting itself when it's trying to do something interesting. And Kirk is just not necessary in this show, mm-hmm. because literally it could have been any other character. If you ask me, the character that this probably should have been is La'an, because mm-hmm. of her really, or Ortegas. Give Ortegas this role of really connecting with Uhura in this way, because we already know they're friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no reason for this to be Kirk other than the thought in your brain, which is, dude, wouldn't it be cool if Kirk was on this show and he was working with Uhura and Spock before they even knew each other on the Enterprise? That's like the worst fan fiction-y fan wank I've ever heard of.
Matthew, was that voice, was that our Quantum Cat jumping
yes,
in as a
Quantum Cat
co-host there?
Okay. Related to Comic Book Guy from the, you know, The Simpsons. That is an autographed picture of Sean Connery signed by Roger Moore. It is worth $150. But I mean, that's the frustration that I really end up with this episode is that mm-hmm. there are some incredibly wonderful ideas, especially for the character of Uhura here. And we are shoehorning Kirk into that for absolutely no reason whatsoever. Whereas the episode where we had with him and La'an was a much more interesting thing because it takes an alternate version of Kirk with this universe's understanding that there's a Kirk. And like, we don't even have to get into whether or not this is the Prime Universe or not, but it's just like, this is a place where the show is trying to be too cute for its own good. And it actually, I think, hurts the storytelling for what they want to do.
Yeah. I don't think I would describe it as them trying to be too cute, but I think that their goals are unclear. So I think the reason Kirk is in this story is, first and foremost, what I was just talking about, that they are trying to slowly build the connections and the relationships between characters that are going to be together on the original series. And they want to show how they met and put them in scenarios together. But of course, it doesn't fit with the background that we already know. And so it feels a bit odd. But I think there's a legitimate reason for them deciding to put him in this story. But he doesn't need to be here. You're right. He does not need to be here. The story would be much better if there were no Kirk in this episode. And Sam can still help out as a xenobiologist mm-hmm. because he's a member of the Enterprise crew at this point. So that's right. Fine. But yeah, Kirk doesn't need to be here for this story to work. And I would agree that his presence here detracts from the strength of the Uhura story because we're splitting time. But there's that line near the end where Pike says, hey, you know, if there's blowback about blowing up the gas station, that's all on me. Or we could say it was the influence of a brash young officer. And that echoes going back to the Kelvin films, sort of the view that Pike had of Kirk in those films and how he was coming up, which is, it's fine as a reference to something we've seen on screen before, but again, it doesn't actually fit with what should be happening with this crew on the show, so I get that. And I think the other reason Kirk is in this episode is because of what happened in Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, and they want to advance the connection with La'an.
Yeah.
But they want to advance that for what it means to La'an, not what it means to Kirk, right? It should be about how it impacts La'an. And we get almost nothing of La'an in this episode. The little bit that we do get, I think, is good. And she has a great point in saying that, hey, you know, it does matter what Starfleet does. It does matter to help other people because I'm one of those people that was saved. But bringing him back so that the two of them can meet in person, it's something we knew they were going to do. It's just a question of how do you do it. And again, I know that I sound like a broken record about the length of the seasons, but it is a case where if you had more episodes to work with, I think that you could do it more deftly. And instead of trying to shoehorn things in here and there mm-hmm. in stories that need more focus.
It doesn't fit in this episode. You know, to put them together either doesn't really help that storyline really for either of them well. It would have made more sense if, yeah, Kirk hadn't been in this episode. It's La'an or Ortegas helping her and all. I mean, I think that you hit on something where they're trying to softly get us to TOS. Mm-hmm. But because this show is so close to TOS, the point of this show is not to get us to TOS, guys. We already know it's coming. We do. We know it's coming because it's like 10 years down the road. This is an Enterprise where we're trying to show how we got from that time period to this time period of TOS.
Right.
Like, that's a different type of story to understand the building blocks of how we get there. Mm-hmm. But the point of doing this show is to help us understand Pike and his crew.
Right.
Because we already know TOS. We already know what's coming. So stop it. Like, I'm so frustrated because it's like you don't understand what the actual why of your show is.
Yeah.
If you understood the why of doing Strange New Worlds was because people responded to Pike.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the reason the show exists.
That's the why.
Yeah.
Everything needs to revolve around that why.
Yeah.
But doing this is doing a thing that which we don't really need because we already know Kirk. Mm-hmm. We already know Uhura. We know these characters. I don't need you to explain them further to me because I will see them in their series and I'll see them in the original series.
Right.
I want this show to be about Pike and his crew.
Yeah.
But and I think that's the thing where so many fans are getting kind of frustrated, where it's like, we're doing these things because we think fans want it, but it's like, what I want really is just to be able to explore what it meant for Pike to be the captain of the Enterprise,
right.
Because I don't want what makes him the same as what we've seen before. I want to kind of see what makes him different, unique. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And his crew.
Well, Uhura is part of his crew, even though that was created for this show. I do think that exploring Uhura in this series is very valid because we don't know a lot about Uhura from past Star Trek.
I'm not trying to say that it's not necessarily valid for that to happen, but mm-hmm. I think the ways in which they're trying to make that happen, specifically by, you know, shoving her and Spock and Kirk together and all these things, it's like I get so frustrated with this because I feel like a professional writing crew should know better.
Well, that's where I think there's a lack of cohesion among the writers. I don't feel like we have, you know, a core group of four or five writers who are sitting together breaking stories and breaking seasons and figuring out this is what we want to do with these characters and this is where we're going to go with them. Okay, how do we get them there? It's more of, here's an interesting story idea I have and here's an interesting story idea I have. And let's shove in some elements from past character threads or storylines into this story so we can keep that going. But it's not the same kind of focus that's needed to make this work on such a constrained timescale. That's my feeling when I'm watching it.
And I think that you're absolutely right because, you know, when you're on a 10-episode season, it's very important to make sure then that, okay, you are going to have some serialization between those episodes. Mm-hmm. You have to figure out, okay, what's the through line? And then you have to have people say, hey, as you the writers come in, okay, we want an episode that includes these elements, but also kind of stands on its own. So go think of a story. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you come back but you have to have that cohesion throughout while at the same time having what they do here. And I think you're absolutely right. You know, one of the beauties of something like the 90s Star Trek or even into Enterprise is you had those writers' rooms who were working very closely together. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a thing that's definitely, you know, missing with this. And that's, I think, it is just frustrating because there's so much about this. Like, again, there's so much about this that was good And it really needs help to be better. And I think I said this to you in a text talking offline a little bit about this. And in all honesty, it's interesting to me because I think the first season was such a gangbuster season. Mm-hmm. And this season has absolutely suffered from a serious sophomore slump in the sense that it just can't seem to find itself. And I think it's swinging kind of wildly at pitches and striking out more often than not. And I don't know why that is,
mm-hmm.
but I just feel like it's just not connecting, to use the sports metaphor, it's just not connecting with the ball mm-hmm. the way that the first season was, where it's like, even ones I didn't love were still felt like a triple.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't feel like it's striking out that often in terms of if you just watch the individual stories and, hey, is this a fine episode or is this an interesting episode or is there a message here that I can take away like you would in past Star Trek? But I totally agree that the first season was head and shoulders above this season. And I feel that that is in part because the mandate for the show was very clear in the first season and the writing of the first season. The show exists because fans loved Anson Mount's Pike, and they also loved Ethan Peck's Spock and Rebecca Romijn's Number One. And they wanted a series about this crew and the Enterprise. So it was very clear what they needed to create. And they gave us almost everything, I would say, that we were hoping for. Honestly, when I started watching the first season of Strange New Worlds, I thought, wow, this is better than I could have hoped for. They really understand what they're creating here.
Yes.
And
yes.
This is, it's fantastic. And it's so refreshing to have this type of Star Trek back. This season, I've enjoyed most of the episodes, but I feel like, well, they're doing something that I kind of admire, and I think it's interesting, this idea of we're going to play with the format. We can do different genres, and we can have fun. We can do serious stories. We can do fun stories. We mentioned earlier, we've got the musical coming up. Next episode after this one is the crossover live-action animation with Lower Decks. That's all great, but I do feel that you either need to give us a series that is just standalone episodes where you're just doing different stuff, or you need to give us something that has more focus so that the story threads that you're putting out there are being pulled and we feel like we're going somewhere instead of like we're just getting somewhat random stories. And I feel like we're kind of caught in the middle of that. I saw someone online posted a week or so ago that for a series that says that it's embracing the standalone episode format of the 90s Star Trek, Strange New Worlds really has very lengthy previously on segments at the beginning of each episode. And that is because they are trying to build a lot of stories into this. And it's just, it's really hard to do with 10 episodes. Yeah. And especially if you're going to play around this much with genres.
Well, I'll challenge that a little bit, though. Star Trek has always copied genres in its storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's part of what we loved about it, is that it would use these different genres to tell stories, mm-hmm. but in the format of Star Trek. TOS set the template for that, and then the rest of the series have followed it. Star Wars did the same thing, especially in the Clone Wars. George Lucas very much played around the idea of using genres to tell different types of stories, but all being Star Wars at the same time. Mm-hmm. I mean, that show has, shows that are inspired by Godzilla, by noir films, by mystery films, by all of these type of things, horror films. So all that, you know, and so I don't really think it's that. Maybe this is going to be wildly unpopular, but I think that because this show has cared less about canon and restrictions, what they're swinging for is creating these stories to which they don't feel as focused on the point of the show as what we had in the first season.
Yeah,
and that's where we really lost our way.
Yeah.
And if they would get back to what the core of this show is supposed to be, which is Pike and his crew
exploring strange new worlds.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think they would have a much more healthy show. And they were creating their own mysteries for this show, and they're not really following up on any of them right now, and that's disappointing.
Well, I would say this episode is true to that mission of exploring strange new worlds more so than I would say most of the episodes in season two so far. Like, this story feels overall, if you take the Kirk element out of it, this story feels a lot more like a season one episode. The type of mystery that they encounter, the idea of aliens that are not recognizable to us, finding a way to communicate with them, stopping what you're doing, harming them. All of that felt like something that we would have gotten into season one. I guess the difference here is that there are a lot of things like the Spock-Chapel relationship or a looming war with the Gorn that are hovering over all of this. And we didn't have that, especially in the early parts of season one, where they were just building the premise of the show and taking its places. So it is, in a sense, like so many TV shows. I'm a big fan of sitcoms. If you look at most sitcoms, the first couple of seasons, very funny, fun. And then season three, season four, five, you go on, because story elements and character relationships and plot lines and all keep piling up and piling up, and then you keep trying to fit all that in, the shows tend to become more serious or muddier. They're not as focused on the fun. I mean, you and I both like Ted Lasso. I don't know. We haven't discussed it too much. I don't know how you feel about the third season of Ted Lasso. But if you compare it with the first season was great fun, and the third one felt like it was some kind of drama, right? Because stuff just builds up over time. And I think here they're trying to keep up with some things that are starting to pile up by, you know, having that moment of Chapel and Spock playing chess and talking about their relationship, which for the purpose of the Uhura episode, if we want to focus on her, as we've been discussing earlier, that scene, as much as I like the scene, also isn't needed for that story, for the Uhura story.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that's one where that scene can be in there if you've excised a lot of the Kirk stuff, you know? And so you're able to, again, you're able to focus on this crew. Right.
Because at least that scene does have a connection to Uhura in the end, because Chapel talks to Uhura. Right.
Yes. 100% So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's just it's one of those places where there's some good. It's just a completely Schrodinger's mixed bag of story elements. And it's a frustrating thing, because what I can see in this episode is a great episode. And what I kind of come out with of it is like, eh, you know, and that's not, I don't want to come out of Strange New Worlds episodes like that, because I did enjoy the first season so much, but this season has just, it's really left me wanting. And I think that's a really frustrating place to be. And, you know, I guess, I mean, this episode's probably, it's probably like 2.75, because it's not really even a three to me, because a three basically says, yeah, that's a good episode, but this isn't even quite a good episode. It's almost good, but it just makes too many mistakes in the writing process to, I think, truly be a good episode. And it definitely misses the mark in all counts of being a great episode, because it truly doesn't understand its focus. And therefore can't hit the mark the way it wants. So where do you land, Chris?
Well, yeah, I agree with you on how it doesn't really stick the landing in what it's trying to do in terms of Uhura. I still enjoy the episode overall, even though today in our discussion, I definitely agree with you that this story would be stronger without the Kirk elements, because I get what they're trying to do, and I can certainly, as I said earlier, see how it's building a relationship between Kirk and Uhura that can explain why she is his communications officer down the road. But I also think that, as I said, the story lacks focus. And so whereas it could be a great story, it could potentially be, you know, a 9 out of 10 Uhura character story. I think for me, it's going to fall short, but I'm not going to take it down as far as you did. I'm going to give this one 7 creepy well probe imitations. Because that, I kept thinking every time those sounds came on, I'm like, sounds like maybe kind of like a well probe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, but I can hear it. Yeah. Yep.
I also liked, though, I liked the kind of similarities of this to the film Arrival, where you've got an alien who you don't know how to communicate with them. You're trying to figure out how to communicate with them. It's not quite the same, because there you at least can actually see the aliens. And
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
I mean, heck, I would say go watch Arrival instead of this, because Arrival is a masterpiece.
Arrival and this is a fantastic film.
Yeah.
For sure. One last thing I did want to point out, there's just this little attention to detail in this episode that I really loved, and it's Ethan Peck. Did you notice that Spock pronounces collectors the same way that he pronounces censors?
Hmm.
I thought it was great that when he's given another word that ends in ORS, he made the point to say collectors and stress it in just the same way. So good job there, Ethan Peck, on that. All right, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Lost in Translation. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. It's a closed group just for listeners. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your comments with Matthew and me there on the comments to that post, also with fellow listeners. We're getting some good conversations there after each episode. I did want to mention, because I actually didn't have a chance to comment myself to the feedback we got from the last episode, and that's because I am in the midst of preparing for eye surgery, which I will be having tomorrow, right after we record this, and hopefully be able to see clearly again. But I've been very, very preoccupied with health issues and things. But Matthew's there, and fellow listeners are there, so please do share your thoughts, and I look forward to chiming in myself here soon. If you are not yet a member and you want to find it, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If not, type the whole name, The Babel Conference. If you'd like to send us email, you can do that by going to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose Saddle Up, and your email will mosey its way right on over to us. You can also find us everywhere in social media. Our username is TrekFM. Now, Matthew, when invisible aliens aren't using your brain as a universal translator, where can people find you?
Well, all I know is I've got a headache from that, so thank you. But you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, I'm here on the network at the 602 Club talking about all of those fandoms outside of Star Trek, so we hope you'll join us there. We've got Literary Treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Chris, you and I talk about Deep Space Nine and the Orb, as well as Star Trek Enterprise on Warp 5. We've also got Artificial Tango talking about Star Trek Picard. And then over on the Nerd Party Network, you'll find me with two shows. One is called Owl Post, as we talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time, Dre Kaufman and I. And then you will find me over on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills talking about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, you know, when you're not trying to figure out how to take care of Schrodinger's cat and just how big it's going to get, where can people find you?
Yeah, it's very hard to take care of. I mean, for one thing, I never know if it's hungry or not. And if I lift the lid to find out, well, it just changes everything. So, yeah, One time it even turned into a dog, and then I had to go buy other food. So anyway, enough of that. But now you can find me elsewhere on the network, as you mentioned, doing these shows that you and I do together. Larry Nemechek and I do The Ready Room from time to time. You can find years of back catalog of that show. And I'm also on many episodes of other shows in the back catalog. So tune into those if you want to hear more of my thoughts on Star Trek from the past, what is it now, 13, 14 years of podcasting. You can also find me in social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. Twitter's where I'm most active. And you can also find me on pretty much all these new platforms, Threads and such. And my username everywhere is C. Brian Jones. So wherever you are, I'd love to hear from you there. And I look forward to talking to you more about Star Trek. And if you'd like to help us keep all these podcasts going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, just go to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. And I want to send a huge thank you to everyone who's supporting us right now, because we would not be here without your help. So thank you so very, very much. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to talking to you about this Lower Decks episode in a few days. We're going to try to do that one a little bit sooner, since they dropped the episode sooner as well.
Well, Chris, I can't wait for that to happen. So hit it.